Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because the world's so full of chaos and madness and scumbaggery and people getting whacked whenever they expose some other form of scumbag. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Speaking of which, learning about the New World Order and the assassinations of decent people and so on and so forth, umpteen millions of conspiracies that are probably out there that we just haven't even discovered yet, I found myself questioning my sanity somewhat and think to myself, oh my God, is this real? Or is this just some kind of a made-up matrix designed to make me go frickin' nuts? And the unfortunate thing is, it's real. And it really does drive some people crazy. And the only way to really maintain one's sanity, I found, is to maintain some levity. What does it do? It provides relief in the face of certain death, basically. Tony Farrell is my very special guest. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny.
Any thoughts on what I've just said there?
Yeah, I think putting in trying to have a sense of humour about this and actually presenting things in a more light-hearted light has an opportunity to win the hearts and minds of people that would otherwise be turned off and be so appalled by all of this that they can't even look at it. Miss Seven's case, for instance, is interesting because, and then one of the reasons why I stuck with it is because the stolen concepts concerned things that the British public, by and large, the ones that are tuned into the plug-in drug, the BBC television programmes on a Saturday evening, their beloved Strictly Come Dancing, if they ever thought, for instance, that that had been stolen from a victimised individual who's been gang-stalked for a decade in the process to keep it all hush-hush, they'd be appalled by that. Whereas, on the contrary, we can't wake them up on the horrors of 7-7, but it might have been been committed by the state apparatus. So I'm hoping that, in a back-to-front way, we can use this case to actually wake up some of the masses that would be utterly appalled by the thought that their beloved TV programme has been stolen. And the second thing is, I'd add to your injection of humour and all of this, it's fantastic to talk with somebody so articulate as you are, Vinny, but I would add one thing that's personal to me, which is my complete faith in all of this. And I just want to, if I may, Vinny, can I just tell you a little bit of story in connection with Seven?
Well, we have a whole hour, so go for your life.
Well, I mentioned in the last half that two individuals that were very supportive of Miss Seven were whacked on the same day, which was the 17th of May 2012. That was the very day I made my second contact. I met her for the first time on May Day 2012, exchanged telephone numbers, and I happened to be, this is the story, on the 17th of May, you've interviewed this gentleman. It's called Moad Dib. You've had him on your show, and he's the maker of Ripple Effect 2 and Ripple Effect, the Nazi Banksters, and I'd thoroughly recommend those programs to be searched by, and it's jforjustice.net.
Now, you can also, I got in contact with Moad Dib, and he allowed me to upload those videos to my channel as well. So if you click on the YouTube little thing on my website, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, you can go there and search Moad Dib or 7-7, it should come up with it.
Right. Well, what happened is that just before Moad Dib completed his Ripple Effect 2 film, he was desperate to get a photograph of my boss, a DCI Steve Williams, who was down on the terror drill on the London bombings on that day, and he admitted that on the fifth. He admitted that to me on the fifth anniversary. Now, this was when there was a terror drill exercise with highly improbable coincidences that morphed into the real thing. So he clearly knew something that he wasn't prepared to let on. So, in an effort to expose him, Moad Dib had instructed me from a base in Sheffield, right, South Yorkshire, to get a photograph so it could feature in the film. So for the best part of the day, I camped out in the bushes overlooking the professional standards unit of South Yorkshire Police until 7 p.m. in the evening, by which time the battery on my phone was exhausted, and therefore, and he was the last person still in the car park and never came out. So I failed to get DCI Steve Williams, but just before the battery went, I got a phone call out of the blue from Miss Seven, and she then we made contact. And then when I went down to London to see about and look at all her case files, she told me the story about one of these two, well, about both these two gentlemen that died on that same day that she tried to make contact. And she told me an incredible story that had similar coincidences. And I'm going to share that story now, if I may. At the final hearing, when it got closed down in front of the corrupt judge, Lord Justice Lawrence Collins, Miss Seven, armed with a team of 24 supporters in the court, or two dozen or so supporters in the courtroom, when she was witnessing Lord Justice Lawrence Collins corruptly closing the case down without enabling her to have any reference to Judge Pumphrey's earlier hearing, in which she won, and he dismissed the case without merit, she watched behind the judge's head at the back of the courtroom walls, and this is how she described it to me, that she saw, coming through the walls in red ink, the words Mene, Mene, Tekel Upasin appear. And she was astounded. With her was one of these two gentlemen that died, who was a Christian pastor. And they were able to, afterwards, to explain what that meant. And if you've ever heard of the expression, the writing on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tekel Upasin comes from Daniel 5 in the Bible, which is all about Belshazzar's feast, where the hand of God writes on the wall in the palace, Mene, Mene, Tekel Upasin. And that evening, when Daniel explains what that all means, King Belshazzar actually meets his death. Now, Seven was telling me that particular story. Now, the reason why hers on my back stood up with that is because just before I left Sheffield, South Yorkshire, and in order to meet with Miss Seven, I used to lead in a Bible study class, a small group, and the very last thing I led on was King Belshazzar's feast from Daniel 5 and the writing on the wall. So I felt that was a remarkable coincidence. And there are all sorts of circumstantial signs that I know I've had in this journey that prior to getting kicked out of the police force, where I was asked to make a stance in dreams, without having any notion of what the New World Order was. So when the day came when I had my moment of decision on the fifth anniversary of the London bombings, when I woke up to 9/11 and 7/7 being inside jobs, it was the faith that gave me the courage, the faith through the circumstantial signs and the dreams I'd had. Now, none of that has abated since. It's continued. And I believe I've got a calling to help Miss Seven, because I believe Miss Seven's case is going to be immensely important in exposing the corrupt establishment. To have audio tapes for 3 days is unprecedented in the United Kingdom courts. And the extent to which it reveals and exposes the courtroom corruption at the highest levels and the abject failure of the Metropolitan Police to do anything about it is not to be scoffed at. I have sent this by email through all the European parliamentarians, all the parliamentarians in the UK, and the Truth Movement. And we're trying to get it out as fast as possible. So thank you very much in this instance for helping us in terms of getting the exposure out there. But I do believe it's immensely important. But
well, you know, here's the thing, Tony. I was reading one of my YouTube comments earlier before the show. Me out protesting or whatever, and he said that you'll never have any effect going out there and talking and broadcasting and so on and so forth, so why bother at all? And you know, to an extent I can see what he's talking about, because you think to yourself, well, how many people will listen to the show? I mean, 10,000 tops. maybe up to 100,000 or something of that nature, off in some ethereal spacey land, listening to AM FM stations, which we can't measure. And I think about this. Whether or not we're effective at exposing the truth by giving coverage to it, I think it's actually a misnomer and it's totally irrelevant. I think the whole point is just to do it, regardless of whether or not you're successful, because it's the right thing to do.
I agree entirely. We have got to be guided by each and every one of us by our own conscience. I mean, let's face it, we're confronted with it utter evil all round. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil, for instance, as Burke would have it, was for good men to do nothing. And by good men, I mean women as well. So the evil part is to be, and what makes you complicit in this, is silence and burying your head in the sand. Each and every one of us are going to be answerable in one way or other. So it's a personal level. And I feel it's almost like I want to wake as many people up and tax their consciences. Whether they listen or not is entirely up to them. But if I feel as though I've been given a calling and been blessed to do that, then so be it. Whether it's not me that's going to make any difference, it will be in a higher power strength.
Here's another point. I also replied to this guy on the YouTube channel, right? And I said to him, look, mate, what you're doing is you're convincing yourself that doing something will accomplish nothing, and so then you choose to do nothing and accomplish exactly nothing. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
You know, don't you get it, people? The more you, the less that you do, the less you accomplish. If you do something, even if it's not, like, ridiculously effective and change the world, at least you're not doing nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I think a lot of people now are waking up to issues like 9/11. We no longer ridicule when we shout 9/11 was an inside job. We no longer ridicule when we shout the London bombings, the Madrid bombings were all inside jobs. And, you know, in more recent times, we've got everything that's happened with the Boston Marathon. All evidence pointing towards false flag operations. And people are becoming increasingly alert to it. But it matters not how many people are alert to it. It's not what you think, it's what you do and whether you take action or not. And there's far too many people who are thinking, well, it's somebody else's business. And in the midst of evil, they are simply too scared to oppose. But men and women become complicit in the evil. They fail to oppose, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I feel guilty if I don't do a show every day and expose at least just a little bit of scumbaggery. Like, you know how some people, they feel guilty about their health? Like, if they don't get their exercise for the day or whatever, they start feeling bad about themselves. Like, oh, man, I really should have gone for that run. It's like that with exposing scumbaggery for me. You know, it's part of your daily exercise regime. And if you don't expose at least a little bit of scumbaggery every day, it's like you become lazy. It's like you become fat. It's like you become what you hate and despise. How can people live with themselves if they're not exposing scumbaggery? I just don't get it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I'm just to tell you this little one, one of the things that I said on the minutes before I was dismissed from South Yorkshire Police, and it was on the 2nd of September 2010 that was my dismissal hearing, I said, the police service are about to nobble the wrong Tony, and South Yorkshire Police are going to make a risk of making themselves complicit in the evil deed and countenance the perpetuation of the murder of hundreds and thousands of women, of innocent women and children in the Middle East. If they sack me today. And they asked me who I meant by the rock, who's the other Tony then? And I said, well, isn't it obvious? It's Tony, I'm referring to Tony Blair, who was the chief architect on the war on terror, you know, which is utterly evil within, you know, grabbing our oil beneath their sand, so to speak, in the Middle East. It was all about resources, all done on the front of false pretense. So, by by doing it that way, when they sacked me, they were very respectful. They were very courteous. And they even thanked me and said I could be even useful to the police service. So the bottom line is here, I don't know what impact, if any, I'm having within the police service. I do know that the chaplain, the police chaplain at South Yorkshire Police, had a quiet word with me and says, boy, you ain't half creating a ripple effect at ACPO level in the police. Now, what do I mean by ACPO? That's the high-ranking officers, the chief constables, the deputies and the assistant chief constables throughout the length and breadth of the country, where we've got 43 police forces in the United Kingdom. So, you know, stand up against evil and shout from the rooftops is my motto. As I say, I've tried my best to shout from the rooftops because I've gone up on the cliff tops of Frogger Edge with a megaphone and put it on camera and tried to make it amusing in the process. Some short, sharp bursts of how I confront South Yorkshire Police, how I confront the evil within. It's how I, you know, how best I can operate. I haven't got the gift of the gab quite like you. I don't think I'd make a radio broadcast like you can, Vinny, but I've got an imagination that can make films, or, you know, with the help of filmmakers who know what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think that it's basically like you can do whatever you really want to, whatever tickles your fancy. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be born in as a multi-talented individual, so I can do radio, do music, do movies, write scripts and so on and so forth. You know, I can pretty much do whatever I like as long as it's some form of part to play in the entertainment game. But the ultimate thing is whatever you feel comfortable with, whatever you feel that you're capable of doing, just go ahead and do it, you know. It's like, I don't know. Everybody's got some kind of a calling that forces them, compels them to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And if they don't do it, it kills you. We'll be right back.